Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, the best people I know are on one end, and the other best people I know are on this end. I'm telling you, this is an awesome show. This is very unusual. We have Elizabeth Hamilton Garino joining us as a co-host today from the Best Ever You Network, and many of you know her from the magazine and her great radio show. And we are together because our guest is so awesome that it's going to take two of us to make sure that we cover all of the great questions, because so many people, we already have people on the lines waiting to speak with him, and so many people have already written. The toilet paper entrepreneur, I'm telling you, awesome, Mike Michalowicz. I cannot believe that we actually have him on, because you've seen him on CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, best-selling book in so many different languages. And the great thing about Mike is that he is the real deal, and it's all about innovation, not about money. So many of our listeners want to start their business. They want to be their best, but they think, hey, I can't do it because I don't have enough money. Well, let me tell you, after this show today, Mike is going to promise you that that is not true, and he's going to give you real-life examples. And he has a new book coming out. He has a new television show coming out. The guy is just smoking. So we got to get on with the show. But I want to remind, just a small detail, I want to remind everybody that the Motivation Marathon that Elizabeth and I are doing, that is coming up in January 14th through 22nd, 9 days of 46 experts and celebrities. We should have had Mike in there. We're going to get him next time around. I'm putting it on air so that we have it recorded. And we'll just be able to share, shine, to be your best in all areas of life. So just go to motivationmarathon.com, and you'll see all the faces, all the bios. You're going to recognize a lot of these people, and it's just going to be a blast. And we're all going to help each other make 2012 the best year of our life. Okay? That's the story, and we're sticking to it. So let's talk about Mike, because he's going to help us do all that and more, too. Mike Michalowicz started his first business at the age of 24, just a baby. He was moving his young family to the only safe place he could afford, a retirement village. With no experience, no contacts, and no savings, he systematically bootstrapped a multi-million dollar business. Then he did it again. And he did it again. His experience building three multi-million dollar companies fostered a philosophy rarely taught to entrepreneurs. The lack of money, experience, and resources is, in fact, your greatest asset, because all of these limitations bring about the key ingredient to entrepreneurial success. It's innovation. Mike is the president of a behavioral e-marketing firm, Obsidian Launch. I may not be pronouncing that right, but he'll correct me. Is a small business columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He's also the business makeover specialist on MSNBC, and he's also author of the cult classic book, which we all know and love, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And he's currently, he has his new book coming out by Portfolio, which is by Penguin Group, and that'll be out in early 2012. And he has his new television show, which he's going to tell us about. And you want to absolutely go to his website right now and sign up for his newsletter, which is www.toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. Pleasure and privilege to introduce Mike and Elizabeth. How are you? Mike, thanks for being with us today to share your shine.
Thanks so much for having me. And who thought you'd be so fired up over the toilet paper? You know, in life, like, who thinks toilet paper would be the exciting thing? So thank you for that great introduction.
You know, I love your thinking outside the box. I love that you have a sense of humor, humility, a splash of, you know, something different. And I think that that's what we need. And I think your message is so timely. I know you wrote your book 2008, but I think the new book and the new television show, your website, all your speaking engagements, you know, there really is a need for this message. And, you know, it really is so important today. A lot of people struggling with money and thinking, you know, I have this idea, but I can't make it real. But how about we start out with what the heck the toilet paper entrepreneur? What does that term really mean, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah. So what it means is it's the real definition of entrepreneurship. And I think a lot of us are misguided. I know I was. I read Fortune magazine. I see Donald Trump on the cover, or Mary Kay Ash, you know, on the cover of, say, Inc. magazine. And I read all these stories, and it's entrepreneur after entrepreneur that have these huge successes financially, you know, huge. And it happened, in most cases, overnight. Like, if you look at Google, like, they have Sergey Brin, the guys from Russia over there. They come here, Larry Page was the other guy, and they're billionaires. Mark Zuckerberg, a billionaire by age 18. And what I noticed, at least for myself, was every time I saw these success stories, I was like, oh, my God, I'm such a failure. I wasn't ever a billionaire, let alone by 18. So it set me up for feeling bad about myself. And then I thought, I said, well, what's the real definition of entrepreneurship? And, kind of like the occupiers of Wall Street call themselves the 99%, I think toilet paper entrepreneur is the 99% for entrepreneurship, meaning most entrepreneurs, it is a struggle. It is dirty. There's stuff that's not talked about because there's some very humbling experiences. And making it isn't usually a multi... No, making it, when you really make it as an entrepreneur, you're making a living that you're comfortable with and you're really satisfied in your work. So I said, what's the analogy that, what's something that no one talks about and there's sometimes struggles? And I'm thinking, and then one day it hit me, not surprisingly when I was in the loo, it hit me, I was like, oh my God, the toilet paper, the time we get stuck with three sheets. Because all of us have been in that situation. And the funny thing is, no one's like, I give up on life. My life's over. I'm never going to leave the throne here, the porcelain throne. No. Everyone figures out how to navigate that situation. You go to the dumpster, the garbage can you find next to you, and you find a treasure trove of stuff you can use. Well, that is, to me, the epitome of entrepreneurship, because no one admits they've been in that situation, yet we've all been in it. And most entrepreneurs carry on and say, oh, life is great, business is great, I'm just doing just as well as the people on the cover of Inc. magazine. That's not the truth. Entrepreneurship is a struggle. But if you are willing to recognize that and accept that, and to be innovative, root through the dumpster of life in this case, find ways to navigate the situation, I promise you, you'll come out to the other side much happier and potentially, realistically, wealthier than you would through any other form of employment. Mm. That's what they're going for.
That is so awesome, and I love that. Oh gosh, I tell you. Okay, well,
the funniest thing, though, I got to tell you, the funniest thing is I get call after call saying, "Hey, I was in the bathroom today, and I was thinking of you. You're the toilet paper guy." So that's the downside, is every
you're
time people are using the bathroom, they're thinking of me.
But those type of analogies, I think that people are moved to good change, right? Which is what we're all about, good change, by things that they, experience in an emotional, in a real visceral way, in a deep way. And I think that your analogy is so blunt and to the point. Elizabeth's a very blunt girl, too.
Yeah.
Really, really forces us to see that stop sign and rethink the paradigm that we've been in, which, probably leads to some of the next questions that Elizabeth has, but just so loving it. And if you want to speak, and I know that we have callers on the line, we're going to get to you, just want to get through a couple of more questions here, you can call 347-637-1318. Okay, Elizabeth, go.
You ready? Okay. I guess I want to know how you really, other than that story, what your background is in being an entrepreneur. Where did you get started, and what makes you successful? I want to back up a little bit and find out who you are and what your business background is and things like that, because I know I know how good ideas come to people, and it's for me, it's always in the bathtub. So maybe I should be the bathtub girl. But you know, it's funny because the bathroom's a place, man.
it is a spot of innovation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll give you the quick background. I'll give you the three or four big bullet points. And actually, you know, Deb already said them. And that's what we hear about a lot of people, the positive stuff. So I've grown three multimillion dollar companies, sold one to private equity, one to a Fortune 500. They're both in technology. The first, actually, all three are in technology. The current one is in web design, behavioral web design. The other two are in computer technology. And one of the big pinnacle things, which I'm sure you'll recognize, my company did computer crime investigation, and we facilitated, among other big cases, the Enron trial. We were one of a few investigators in there, the computer crime investigators. And when that trial broke, my company was at the right place at the right time, and we just took off explosively. And by the way, that's one of the golden secrets to entrepreneurial success is a lot of time it ain't you, because at least it ain't me. I don't think I'm much smarter or much more innovative than many people, but persistence, just being around a lot, allows opportunities to spring up, and when they do, you can kind of jump on and grab that tiger's tail and ride it out. And that's what we did with Enron in a lot of these cases. But just to give you the background, no aspirations to be an entrepreneur. I graduated college. I couldn't get a job. I got married very young, at 24, and I already had my son, too. So really early start on life. My wife and I now are married quite a few years, and we have three children. But we start out, and I'm just working a regular job, and it sucked. I worked at a computer store, like a CompUSA, which probably doesn't exist anymore. But even prior to CompUSA, there was this other store, and I was working there. And if you came in to buy a computer, I was the greasy kid that was trying to sell you a dot matrix printer for my $5 commission. So, yeah. That was me. It's not in law. And one night I went out for drinks with another guy that worked there, and we were talking how hard we work, and you know, we're moving stock and we're selling stuff. And the owner of the store, you know, he makes all the money, and we assumed he must be a millionaire, a multimillionaire, off of our blood, sweat, and tears, and he's not that smart, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you throw enough beer in me, and stupid decisions are made. So, like six beers in, I said, F this, I quit tonight, I'm going to start my own computer store. And that's how I got started. It was a drunken, slobbering, embarrassing super. But when you resign with a flirt to your boss, it's hard to get a job back. So the next morning, I was thrust into entrepreneurship with a hangover and with a shocked and scared wife and baby.
And baby, yeah.
And ultimately, while that was an extremely scary time, what it points back to is when our back is to the wall, innovation pops up. So we had very little savings at that point, very little, and our families, while they live locally, really weren't interested in having us move back in. So we kind of strategized, where do you live when you have no money and you need a place that's safe and you can work crazy hours and it's quiet and, like, you know, all these things. And then the answer kind of popped up, a retirement village. And there was this one building, it was complex, that had a retirement building in it for retired folks. And we lobbied our way in, and I was with people, I like to say, between 80 and dead. I mean, that's basically the age range there. I mastered Pinochle, and that's where I got started. And, you know, for $300 a month, we lived in a safe place, a two-bedroom little apartment, and it was a great way to get started. So that was my startup story, and I've taken that philosophy with me forever, is don't have money be the answer. Have innovative thought and thinking be the answer.
Isn't it hard for people to be married to us as well? It's very hard to be married to my husband is the saint. I mean, it's hard to be married to an entrepreneur because it's a different mindset, because we'll give up anything for our business. I mean, if it's food, we'll give it up. If it's a place to live, we'll give it up. If it's, you know, whatever it is, we'll give it up to get where we're, what we're trying to do done.
There should be a TV show about that, the spouse of an entrepreneur. It really takes a special person, the fortitude, because you are tied in, you're kind of like one of those three-legged races with someone, when you don't know where the hell they're running, the entrepreneur. So you get yanked around, and I still do it, and my wife goes for the ride where I say, you know what, here's the new venture, and I'm going all in. And it's another big roll, at least push the dice, and it's scary for that
you market. Know, yeah, my husband has nicknamed me Outflow.
That's funny.
She's not lacking for ideas, I tell you. Elizabeth has always got a great new idea, and you're an idea man, too. I think a lot of the listeners, you know, they probably are saying to themselves, well, you know, this is great. I have an idea, and I'm listening to Mike. I'm listening to Elizabeth. You know, this is great to have a great idea, and I'm willing to make some sacrifices, but, you know, I'm still not sure that I'm buying into. If I don't have money, if I don't have the backing, then I can't be a success. And one of the brilliant parts of your message, I think, is that it's in the innovation. Also, I think it's in the enthusiasm, because you really express I feel the love through the airways. It's enthusiasm. It's sincere dedication. It's really believing in what you're doing, and you're doing it for the right reason, and then the money comes. But can you give us some examples of some of these people that you've worked with who have become successful, or how someone listening right now, why the money is not the most important thing to have in being a great success?
Yeah, and I would say money is the least important. And let me tell you the trap of money, because it happened to me. And it's embarrassing and humbling at the same time. Money, I believe, is an amplifier of our existing habits. So if we have poor habits, and, you know, one extreme is like a drug addiction. You have really bad habits and you get money, you do more of that. If you have really good habits, you know, pick Mother Teresa, and she gets money, you know, she doesn't buy a huge house. She spreads the goodness in her mission. She was clearly on a mission. So money simply amplifies her habits, but it doesn't enhance or restrict our ability to get started and to innovate and to change things around. So just the example I did was when I was my first company, I got a few rewards, you know, the Young Entrepreneur of the Year type recognition, and a bank approached me, and up to that point, bootstrapped the whole way, and they gave me $250,000 and said, here's a loan, just pay it back when you can, we believe in you. And I still had bad habits. I didn't think I did, and most of us don't. We think we do the right thing, but I wanted to impress my customers, so I got tons of advertising that went nowhere. That was really big newspaper advertising, and I upgraded my car because I wanted to have an impressive car when I went on a sales appointment so I could show success. I wanted to show all the elements of success, but it really wasn't there. Here's why. So that's why money can be a trap. It lets you go down these tangents that are not the right way to go. It allows you to amplify the bad stuff you're doing. When you have the lack of money, when you make mistakes, it's very, very painful. When I have no money and I scrap together $100 to run an advertisement, it doesn't work, that is painful. So the nice thing of not having money is you feel the pain immediately and you can adjust accordingly. Now, let me just share with you just kind of one innovative thought that came out when you have no money, because people say, well, I can't do certain things. I can't advertise when I have no money. Well, you can. And actually, you can do anything without money. You just have to put a lot of thought into it. So here's one strategy I did with a client of ours. They actually owned a pizza shop. They had a pizza shop, tons of competitors in the area, and it was very difficult getting their phone to ring. You know, you can just go to the guy that's 2 minutes closer to you to get your pizza. Why go to this guy? Well, what we did, and he had no money to advertise, and that's a big problem if you're in the pizza industry. You got to be all over the web and in the Yellow Pages. People still use that, believe it or not, and so forth. So what we did was we noticed that there was other pizza shops in the general area that were going out of business, just like anyone that's listening right now. We have a lot of competitors, unfortunately, due to the economy, that are going out of business. Well, those other pizza places already have their ads in the Yellow Pages. They already have their listings on the web for, you know, the pizza shops in the town. They already had all the signs up on their building with the phone numbers to call. Well, when they went out of business, the Yellow Pages ad doesn't get removed. It runs for the rest of the year. The web listing stays up for life. The sign on the building, it stays up until the next tenant comes in and takes it down. So those numbers were still getting calls, but it was a disconnected number. So what we did was we called the local phone company and said, hey, these disconnected numbers, and we identified like 6 or 7 of them, please have them redirected to us. And it cost $5 a number to redirect. Now, the second we did that, our phone started ringing instantly because customers were trying to call for pizza at these other places that were out of business. We'd answer the phone and say, hey, you're calling Joe's Pizza. The number you're calling, they've gone out of business, but we're serving your area, so we'd gladly provide the pizza. And instantly, we had this huge marketing platform, and we got business in seconds. That's how you think outside the box, and that's why you don't need investment capital. You just need innovative thinking to be successful.
Wow, I am so blown away by that. How about you, Elizabeth? How's everybody on the listening line feeling about that?
And by the way, if you're listening, so don't be just a listener. Take action. Like, if that resonates with you and you can use in your business, damn it, you know, do it. Go. Redirect numbers to you. It works.
I just wanted to say one thing, Elizabeth, because I know you have something you want to ask too. But I just want people to go to Mike, to go to your website, because one of the things that's so cool about what you do, Harvey McKay does this too. He was on a couple weeks ago. You have resources that people can immediately download to take action in their life with your knowledge from your great experience. You have download forms for, you know, are you an entrepreneur, the checklist, the quarterly plan, the prosperity plan, all sorts of stuff. So tell everybody your website again where they can find all those resources.
Yeah, it's toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. It's a doozy to spell, so just go into Google, type in toilet paper E, and I'm sure by the time you get to that point that it'll auto-populate. And like you said, there's tons of free resources. Actually, if you sign up for the newsletter, too, you can get some videos that were shot of me at some major events. And you can kind of, you know, see some speaking engagements I did around these topics, like the strategy I just shared. All free.
Cool.
Is this what you is helping people become entrepreneurs what you want to do for the rest of your life? Or do you think you'll get back into a situation where you own another business and, you know, buy and sell and then, you know, do that kind of thing? Or is this your mission?
Well, thanks for asking that. You're the first person ever to ask me that, and the hair thing up on the back of my neck.
That would be Elizabeth asking you something that nobody else has ever asked you.
No one's ever asked me that. And the hairiest thing on the back of my neck, because this really is playing into what I've defined as my life's purpose. And why standing up is I've only realized that maybe in the last 6 months. Up to this point, I've always labeled myself as an entrepreneur. So even 6 months ago, you know, and my book's been out for a while now, even 6 months ago, people come to me, they'd run into me and say, oh, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, and I'd say, I'm an entrepreneur. And then I would explain it. And I finally come to realize, no, I'm not an entrepreneur anymore, and that's a promoter, an advocate for entrepreneurship. And the vehicle really is through authorship. And, you know, speaking and television is part of it, but really my true passion is if I can only do one thing in life, it's to inspire and educate people on the real side of entrepreneurship and really encourage people to do it because I believe in it so much. I believe it's the ultimate expression of ourselves. And I think the real side is I think a lot of people go into it because I want to get rich quick, and I think that's a mistake. It's not about the money. It's about experiencing life to its fullest. Entrepreneurship gives the ultimate for self-expression. And that, I believe, is my mission in life, is to help people express themselves through this form of expression, entrepreneurship.
It's almost like being an artist.
That's what I do, and yes, it's my life purpose, and I cannot see myself changing from that.
Good, yeah. It's almost like being an artist in a way. I wanted to paint a picture for you while I'm on the artist analogy. Here's a person, and they're sitting there, and they're listening to this show, and they're like, okay, I really want to start my business. Okay, I'm going to write this business plan. I'm going to get all my ducks in a row. I'm going to go to the bank. I'm going to go try and get maybe an SBA loan or something like that, or maybe I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I'll wrap into one, and I'm going to see how you answer it. And then I'm going to hope and pray that there's an angel investor out there also, and this is all just going to work. And, you know, 2 years from now, I am going to be a kabillionaire. Okay, and that's the typical mindset of somebody going, this is the way an entrepreneur goes. They write a business plan, off to the bank we go, and here's an angel investor, and bing, bang, boom, we're done.
I'm grinding my teeth as you say that.
Well, I am too, as I'm saying it. I'm like, oh, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to, because I know it's not the way it works. How does it really work?
Yeah, so how it really works, particularly nowadays, is take action now. And the biggest mistake is to pursue the money side. And we've all heard it. But I'm going to tell you the logic behind it, right? We've all said, do it because you love it and the money will come. And we actually said earlier on this call, and it's true. It's absolutely 100% true. But I'll tell you the logic behind it, is if we go after something for the money, you know, the hot thing now is social media. I mean, ad nauseum, I want to gag myself if I hear social media one more time. But social media experts, right? There's a lot of money in that. And many, many people have gone into that because of the money opportunity. Here's the thing. A few people have gone into that because it resonates with them. It resonates with their passion. Those people are unstoppable because passion, if you do something you're passionate about, it brings about persistence. This is the weird thing. I love what I do so much that at the end of the day, I am more hyper than I am right now. Like the energy grows. But in the vast majority of stuff I do that I don't love, by the end of the day, it drains me and I'm tired and I need my rest. So there's some people in the social media industry, a select few I'd say, that love it for a greater purpose. And that passion is bringing about persistence. And persistence inevitably wins out over everyone else because they stick to it. Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs, what an example of absolute passion. There's other companies out there that are doing it for the money, and I can't. They're not successful, but they will never be legacy successful like Steve Jobs is. There's other PDAs and stuff out there, but there will be nothing that touched what he's delivered because of his raw passion. All of us have this opportunity, and maybe on a quote unquote small level, but I would say Apple is simply big because of the financial side. But when we look at small financial businesses, they can have just as huge an impact if it's the entrepreneur that's doing it because of their absolute passion. So I'm not a big fan of business plans. Actually, I just want to just delve into that too. I go every year up to MIT. I've been doing it for 11 years now. I go to MIT every year with a group of 80 entrepreneurs. The group is called Gathering of Titans. Between me and you, it should be called Gathering of Egos at times. But it's all these entrepreneurs, and we came together 11 years ago because everyone had a certain passion. Some of the businesses that come out of there you may recognize. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, the founder of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, was actually the founder of Brian Scudamore. He started, when we started 11 years ago, he was under $2 million in revenue. And he actually sat next to me and still was in the class. And I remember talking to this guy, I'm like, junk, how can you make money in junk? He is so passionate about it, he's proved he's at $250 million in revenue now on every continent in this world because of his passion. Out of that group's come Ticket City, which is the number two provider next to StubHub of tickets. Out of that group, you know, it's come me. And here's the most interesting part. About a year ago, we had an investor come in and say, he spoke to the whole class and said, who here started their business with funding or a business plan? And no one raised their hand. 1-800-GOT-JUNK didn't get started with funding or a business plan. Ticket City, no funding, no business plan. What I'm doing, no funding, no business plan. And that proves that don't go out, don't write the business plan, don't spend the time trying to find angel investors. Determine your passion. Now, don't be stupid. Don't go in blindly, but really focus in on your passion. Do what you love to do. It becomes magnetic. It'll start attracting people. And ironically, once you start getting customers on, that's the time that the planning comes in place, once you start getting a feel for how customers are responding to what you do.
You know, I was, when you were saying that about the passion, I was thinking, because you had the Mother Teresa quote before, and I was just thinking, you know, hey, she did what she did day in, day out, and she worked with lepers. She did all these things that nobody would want to do, most people would want to do, and that was her whole life mission. That's what she believed in. That's what she loved. But you never, you know, heard her saying, oh, wow, you know, these lepers are really getting to me. I got to go to Hawaii and take a vacation and let my hair down, you know? I mean, it's one of those things that when you were saying at the end, when you were just saying now, at the end of the day, you're more charged because you love what you do and you believe in it, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm putting you with Mother Teresa now. You know, she, at the end of the day, it wasn't like she needed that vacation. She was loving what she do. And I think that if all of us just took a step back to reflect on who we are, what we're designed to do, what we're good at. Don't do the compare and despair thing. Somebody else has their own mission. You know, there's more than enough sunshine for all of us to get that, you know, great tan of success. and we all helped each other, it would just be so much better. I'm telling you, do I love us? I love our listeners. I love us.
You're so,
like,
you're so right, Deb.
Why is it so,
you know,
common sense?
I think the biggest mistake
about
we all
it, but
make,
nobody does it.
And when I say we all, I'm thinking about myself here, is trying to comply with what other people's expectations are. And it's all the way back from the grade school and high school days. You know, I wanted to fit in my clique. So I did certain things that really weren't me. The great irony in life is if you are unabashedly yourself, you don't comply with anyone's rules except for the rules you've defined for yourself, you become the most magnetic. People resonate with that because you're unabashedly yourself. So stop trying to be other people. I never heard compare and despair. Don't do that. Just be yourself and watch what happens. It's great.
Do you do you think everybody's an entrepreneur? I notice you have a passion with younger people. Do you think, you know, I'm 42. Do you think I can be 42 and be an entrepreneur, or do I have to be 25?
Yeah, so age is totally irrelevant. And, you know, it's funny, when I started out, I was speaking mostly with young male entrepreneurs, and I found actually 35 to 50. So you're more of the people I'm speaking with. There's a huge surge of female entrepreneurs right now, and it's a great, great thing. I don't think guys are out. I don't think women are necessarily better. I think women have a better opportunity and are naturally better kind of playing into the market now. So I think age is totally irrelevant. In regards to your other question, should everyone be an entrepreneur? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. While I want to say, yeah, you go for it because I believe in it so much, it isn't for everybody. It isn't for everybody. If you're not a risk taker, and not all of us are, if you aren't a risk taker, you know, forget it. Because you have to go in with total faith in yourself. You have to take, as Martin Luther King says, you have to take the first step even though you can't see the whole staircase. And not all of us are wired that way. All I believe is if you have an inkling, that thought of being an entrepreneur, you at least have, you should try it out. You should at least dip the toe in the water, or I prefer take at least one plunge, and if you start drowning, get dragged out and then never do it again. But I think it would be a shame to live in the regret of having that thought and then never playing it out. So if you had a thought, go for it, but no, not everyone should be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. How many times in your life, and you don't have to give an actual number, but, you know, round it up or down, how many times do you think in your life somebody has said to you, go get a real job?
That's a great question.
A lot. Here's the funniest thing. When I sold my second company, and my second company sold, you can go into, let's listen to the New York Times somewhere and Wall Street Journal, millions. It sold for millions. When I sold that company, I made in one day more money than my father had in his entire business career. He was an employee for one company. And I remember coming home to him and I said, hey, Dad, I sold the company. He's like, oh, it was exciting. And he was very supportive. And one of the things he said under his breath, not to be negative, just because he said it, he's like, he goes, you know, you'll have a contract now at the company that bought you. That's great. You have a real job.
Yeah.
The funny thing is my father was not an entrepreneur, never had the aspiration, nor was my mother. No entrepreneurial desires. So they're wired to see their reality their way. And for them, you know, they want the best for their son based upon their experience, which means get a job for life. So a lot of people have told me, get a real job. And still to this day, why don't you just get a real job? You know, your luck's going to run out at some point. And that's because that's their reality. But ultimately, monetary success or failure really doesn't matter. What matters the most is, am I feeling fulfilled? Am I happy and complete in who I am? Because the money will come, or at least the comfort that is necessary to survive will come. And trust me, I've seen some really dark financial days, and I take some big financial risks. And while I've had great ups, I've had great downs after that too, and ups and downs. And over the time of ups and downs of money, I've found that money is less and less relevant in defining the person. I really thought it defined us, but money is really almost nearly irrelevant in defining the person. It's just how happy are you in what you do and satisfied and complete and fulfilling what you've defined as your life mission.
You know, we had a question in the chat room, too, and the price is right. I love that. He was commenting that he was saying that you're avoiding the business plan. I think he's looking for a little bit more clarification on that because he's feeling a little lost. Like, why avoid the whole business plan thing?
Oh, so okay. So here's the problems with the business plan. A business plan, you know, some of the key elements of a business plan is define your financials for the next 3 to 5 years. That's typical stuff. So you're going to start a company. What's the revenue going to be in the next 3 to 5 years? Who's the dream team? So you got to define the management team, yourself and the other people that are going to get involved. Define the ideal client. Well, the thing with all that stuff is it's all false. Whatever you write, I can guarantee you'll be wrong. No company in the history of the world has ever been able to project its revenues because, quite frankly, if you could project the revenues for a company, you might as well invest in the stock market because you'll be a billionaire. You'll do better than Warren Buffett because no one can even predict how the stock market's going to do tomorrow. So how do you think you can predict for 5 years or 3 years how your business is going to do? It's impossible. The dream team, I'll tell you, when you start a business, the dream team is one person, you. Those people that you listed that are going to help you out, they have their own butts to care for. They may say kind words and want to help you, but they got their own problems and stuff they're going to deal with. So the dream team is you. And the client, whoever you think is going to buy your product, you don't know who's going to buy your product until they actually start buying it. Because all the people you talk to, they'll tell you, oh, your product sounds great. That service you're going to offer, oh, I would buy that in a heartbeat. But then the day you introduce it, they struggle to find their want. Oh, I don't have the money now. Come back to me later. They really don't want it. So all that stuff in a business plan is hypothetical. When the reality plays out, it's always dramatically different.
Interesting.
So that's why business plans are a waste. They're an illusion.
Do you know what I don't
suggest?
Like, can I add to that real fast before you keep going?
Yes.
The other thing about business plans that I can't stand, I am a big hater of business plans. I won't ever write one. I really hate them. I don't like them because I always find I'm maneuvering in some entirely different way than what I wrote down. I outgrow business plans so quickly, and I'm doing something different or whatever. Do you find that part, aside from all the money stuff, you know, there's all these things, you know, what are you actually going to do with your business, that it changes, especially when you're the dream team of one?
It always changes. So in the beginning when I started, I wrote business plans because that's what we were taught, right? We hear that from other entrepreneurs, possibly, definitely from schooling, definitely from what we've read, this SCORE website. So I did a business plan, and sure enough, the day I opened my business, it went on the shelf. I opened it 3 years later. It was covered with dust to say, huh, none of this stuff came true. Interesting. And that was kind of the realization.
Okay.
It's kind of like there's a saying when there's a battle in a war, they say you can do as much war planning as you want or battle planning as you want. When the first bullet flies, the plan's out the window. The reason is there's so many variables. You don't know what's going to happen. And business is the same. The second you turn on your phone for the first time and it rings and it's someone you didn't expect, or maybe someone you open your business and the first call you get is a lawsuit from a competitor because you accidentally used their name, everything goes out the window. So you just can't prepare for it. The only way to do it, from my experience, is have a vision where you define who you are, what you feel your purpose is, what gets you passionate. Then define what I do. I define the end game. I say, in 10 years, where do I want to be? What kind of impact will I've had on my customers or my community? What will the numbers look like? If all the stars align, I put that big X on the map 10 years out. And the reason I picked 10 years, by the way, it's been statistically proven that, particularly in the U.S., anyone can achieve any degree of success within 10 years. Due to our educational infrastructure, due to the resources available, especially with the Internet and all this free content, anyone can improve their education and get access to the people they want within 10 years can achieve anything, which means you could be homeless today and you can be the world-leading rocket scientist or the biggest entrepreneur in the world 10 years from today. So the beautiful thing about 10 years, say that X on the map 10 years out, is no one can dispute it. Anything is possible. But once I put the X on the map, then what I do is every quarter, every 90 days, I say, what can I do? What's the biggest things I can do in the next 90 days to move toward that goal? Because at least 90 days, I can get a little sense. I know who my competition is. I generally know how the economy's going. I may know if there's big opportunities coming my way. Then after those 90 days go, I may not be in alignment with that destination of mine, so I kind of realign my corporate ship, if you will, define the goals for the next 90 days and move in this next big step. Then after 90 days, stop, reassess, and realign and push forward the next big goals. And it becomes kind of a zigzag pattern, but sure enough, if you keep realigning and defining the next goals for the next quarter, the next 90 days, it's highly likely you're going to end up pretty darn close to that vision you set for yourself.
Mm. You know, this is like so cool because sometimes it's what's not written down. Sometimes it's what's not said. It's what we want, but what we need to get there may be different than anything that we could ask or imagine. And I know this is going to sound silly, but I'm just visualizing, because I had done a blog post on this recently, but that bamboo thing, you know, those bamboo roots, they grow for 5 years under the ground before you can ever see anything above the soil line. But in those 5 years, it looks like nothing's happening, but the most important thing to make it super strong, super awesome, is happening in that time that you think nothing is happening. And what I hear you saying is you're doing your passion, you're looking at that vision, the end. Where do I want to be in 10 years? What would be my best case scenario? You're looking at all those things and they can all be happening. And just because we don't see those results immediately doesn't mean that they're not happening. And how do you keep motivated in that time when you don't really see necessarily the results that you want? But, you know, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle type syndrome, you know, because
many people do. Yeah, so the key, how do you stay motivated? The key is if you're truly doing what you're passionate about, your gut or your soul or your heart, whatever you want to call it, will keep you in alignment. No, inside that, man, I'm just getting so much satisfaction out of trying this and pursuing that I'm just going to not stop. When I launched my book, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, it so spoke to my style and how I go about things, yet the first day I had zero sales of that book when I launched it. And this is, tell you how painful zero is. That means my own mother didn't buy a book that day. But inside, I still felt satisfied. I said, maybe other people don't get it, but man, this is who I am. I'm going to stick with it and stick with it and stick with it. It's generally the people that go after something, say, gosh, it's not working, that give up, that really aren't speaking to their true passion. They were doing it because other people told them to do it, or they did it because they thought there was a good money opportunity there. I'm telling you, don't consider the money. Don't listen to what other people are doing. Really, really go soul-seeking. Really listen to your heart. And if you could be anyone you wanted to be, if you could do anything you wanted to do, what would it be? Once you've defined that, and it may pop up when you're next time you're taking a bath, or maybe it'll take a few years, but it'll come to you. Just keep thinking about it. Stick with it. And because you're passionate about it, that is the one kind of flame that keeps flickering when the rest of the motivation is gone. And just keep listening to it, and it'll get you past that kind of breaking point and onto the very successful side.
What if you are a person who is, let's say I know exactly what I want to do, okay? But I'm sitting here and I'm just going to paint another story for you here. I'm sitting here and I have 7 children to feed, and I am schlepping to that job every day, and I've got my mortgage, my cars, and my 7 kids, and I'm telling you, I really want to open up a dog grooming company or whatever. I just pulled something out. I have no idea why I said that, but let's say that's what I really want to do. What do you say to that person?
Yeah, so what I say to that person is everything you've done up to this point has gotten you to exactly where you are. So the only thing I can do is I can project where you'll be in the future, because if you continue this pattern, you'll continue to be exactly where you are. So if you are not content with where you are, I can promise you, you won't be content a year from now or 5 years from now. So I can show you the continued dark side, if you want to call it. Now, when it comes to the other side, like, this is what I really want to do, this is really what I really want to be, the next question I say is, how much risk and how willing are you to make this vision come true? Because ultimately, all those things, children included, are obligations. And anyone can start and pursue what they want if we were willing to live in a box on the street, because then there's no personal cost. So ironically, as people continue on in life and we accumulate more stuff, the bigger house, the nicer car, the more we lock ourselves in because we feel more and more obligated to retain this stuff, and we become less and less likely to take on a risk. So a person like that, it's a real gut check. And I don't know the answer. They have to look inside themselves and find it. The one promise I make them is if you don't change what you experience today and what you feel today, I guarantee you'll continue to experience and feel. And maybe you just need to be at peace with that. Conversely, if you want to pursue this new thing, this new opportunity, how much are you willing to dial back your life so that you can make it a reality? Because the one thing I can almost assure you is when you start a business, it's the rare exception that goes onto the cover of Inc. magazine. It's the rare exception within 1 year you have this wildly successful business. It is true, the old adage, most overnight successes take 15 or 20 years. It takes a lot of effort. So you got to be at peace with where you are now or be willing to dial back your life to a stage where you can sustain for a long period of time growing slowly before you have that explosive moment where you do get on the cover of Inc. magazine.
And, you know, if you plant a lot of nothing, don't expect when nothing grows. And what you're saying is, you know, just get those seeds in the ground. I'm seeing so many people in the chat room, and I just want to thank everybody for being with us. But I firmly, firmly believe that, you know, if somebody's listening right now, Mike, I think that that really is a promise that this is something that they can embrace. You know, I don't think that there are accidents. I think people are going to connect with you and learn about you because, you know, that old adage, the, you know, when the student, the teacher arrives. And I just want to encourage everybody, all of you great guests, all of these awesome people that are here listening to you. You're not here by accident. Connect with Mike. This is what he does. Obviously, you know that he really is honest and sincere in what he is about, and he wants to help you. You can go to his website. You can get his book. But I'm wondering, right, before we go, because I'm looking at the time running out, I want to make sure that people know about your new TV show that they can check into and your new book that's coming out in a few months, and, you know, because you're just doing great things.
Yeah, thanks. So, well, I'll start with the book. The new book is called The Pumpkin Plan. And the word seed is used in there a lot. And well, I'll tell you what the pumpkin plan is about, is I spent about a year studying pumpkin farmers, of all things, and noticed something interesting that plays into entrepreneurship. Most pumpkin farmers grow very ordinary pumpkins, you know, the ones we buy at Halloween time. You know, these 2, 5, maybe even a 10-pound pumpkin would be a big one. But a very small percentage, like 0.0001%, of pumpkin farmers grow what's called colossal pumpkins. These are the ones you see in like the paper that are like, you know, half a ton, 1 ton. It takes 2 trucks to move in. Well, the interesting thing is that these pumpkin farmers that grow colossal pumpkins only modify the growing behavior by about 5%. 5% of things they do is different than the ordinary pumpkin farmers, yet the pumpkin responds explosively. Well, the same is true in entrepreneurship. Most entrepreneurs grow ordinary businesses. That's not a bad thing, but we're running around like crazy, trading time for money, working through the night, panicking to get things done, just work, 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 work. The very few select entrepreneurs grow these very explosive companies, companies that are very remarkable in their field. Maybe they're very large, but maybe they're small, but they're remarkable, and it doesn't demand all the time and attention of the entrepreneur. They can kind of sit back and even watch it grow on its own. So in The Pumpkin Plan, this new book, which is coming out through Penguin Books, I run the parallel of what these pumpkin farmers have discovered in how to grow colossal pumpkins and the uncanny parallel in entrepreneurship, what you can do to grow a very remarkable, explosive company. So that's The Pumpkin Plan. It's available now on Amazon.com if you want to check it out. And if you join my mailing list, I'm sure I'll be stalking you like crazy when it comes out next year to check it out even more. And then the TV show, we're filming the pilot. I can't reveal the details yet because it's still a little bit under wraps, but we're filming the pilot Thursday. So day after tomorrow, from when we're recording this, I'm going to meet with the film crew, and we're going to be filming. And the concept of the show I can share is we're going into Main Street businesses. Actually, my concept for the show name is Main Street Revival. It may sound a little too religious for them to take that, but that's really the idea, is to go into Main Street America, where there's these small stores that are being shuttered and these small businesses that are being shuttered. And the reason isn't because there's not enough money. The reason isn't because the economy. Our problem is innovation has died. The big Walmart, these small companies are trying to take on the big Walmart head-to-head, and Walmart just steamrolls them. So the idea of the show is to go in these businesses and show them alternative ways, ways that they don't have to be better, they just have to be different, because different itself is better. And that can resuscitate these businesses. So that's what the new show is going to be about. And when the details come out on it, which will probably be in the spring, I'll be sure, Deb and Elizabeth, to give you guys a heads up, and we can talk about it in more detail then.
Wow. Wow. I tell you, this hour just totally flew by. And how about you? I'm telling you, I am glad it's recorded, because I have to go back and recycle all this wisdom. It's unbelievable and such a timely need. You know, the business is one thing, and then the business of living, you know, it's another thing, but they go together. And what you bring to
us
is the possibility. Yeah, to you know, you are wherever you go and whatever you're doing. And I love that you have so many. I think that's why this TV show is going to be such a hit, because you take your knowledge. I mean, knowledge is great, but if I can't apply it, if I read the book and I can't apply it in my own life, it doesn't do me any good. One of the key things that you're so good at doing is taking your knowledge and helping people apply it, you know, to their own life, so that the magic can happen, the miracles can start growing for them with their own one-of-a-kind shine. And I think that's where we all help each other. And that's why I am saying we are in the Best People We Know Club again. What about you, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah. I think what's refreshing also in talking with you, Mike, is that you're not talking in some – I don't feel like I'm in – a university class learning about business, you know, 101 times 300 minus, you know, whatever algorithm to get, you know, business going. So, you know, it's really, you know, that's refreshing. You're just normal. And it's nice to hear that you had your life is, you know, everybody can relate to that. I mean, you know, I think most of us can relate to starting out, new family, you know, all of that stuff that you've gone through to get to where you are today. So that's nice, too. I have a question about stress, you know, because I'm the Best Ever You Network, and so we talk about stress a lot. And the stress component that goes with – I know we're short on time, too, so just heads up as I talk. Open this can of worms.
You're going to have him on your show.
I can
tell
him.
You can get
like,
it in
quick.
Oh, I love
it. You know?
And then double co-host, too. It'll be fun. We'll just have a fun fest. But I want to talk about stress because, you know, I know from being an entrepreneur for many, many years, too, that the stress component is amazing, and it's also stressful on my husband. You know, I'm not kidding. My nickname's Outflow, because to get things done sometimes it costs money, or we have to run an ad, or we have to do this or that, and there's money going out the door, and he's like, oh, my God, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
How do you deal with stress, and how do you, even if it's not entrepreneur, just, you know, in our busy lives, how do you deal with stress? How do you keep yourself healthy, and how do you create the family time that's so important as a father of three?
Yeah, so it's a struggle for me, too. And I think anyone I've met that says, oh, I'm stress-free and you know, blah, 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 I think they're lying maybe to themselves, or maybe just lying outwardly. So I'm stressed. But here's how I contain it. The first of all thing is to admit I experience stress, because it's very stressful to deny you're having stress because you stress about keeping up that facade. So first of all, accept that we all go through stressful periods and admit it. There's nothing to be ashamed of, but there's nothing to be proud of either. I know other people say, you don't know stress. I am stressed. It's just a fact of life. So for me, at least, just accepting that's a fact of life helps reduce the stress itself. You know, they always say exercise is important, and I like to say I exercise, but in reality, yeah, maybe once a week I get to the weight room and I'm half-heartedly doing it. So instead, I've done some things that force exercise. Actually, right now I'm standing at my standing desk, so I'm standing here. My office, how my facility is set up, I'm in a suite, so my office is down one side, and I have another office that's all the way down the other end of the hallway. And about 10 times a day, I got to walk back and forth. I swear to God, I'm doing a mile of walking every day. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the exercise component, I am really bad at forcing myself into the gym. It doesn't happen. So I try or enforce automatic kind of exercise. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the balance of family time, that's one of the problems about being passionate about what you do. One of my great weaknesses is I love so much what I do that I neglect at times my family. And I'm embarrassed to admit that, but there's times I'll be at work and it's like, ooh, I could throw in another 2 hours tonight because I got the energy and I just love what I'm doing. And I'm like, you know, it's 2 hours away from my wife and kids. So this is where, at least for me, having a partner that brings back that balance, my wife gets what I do. And I've told her, I said, I need your guidance and help. When I'm too much away from the family, it's not because I'm trying to be a schmucko here. I'm so into what I'm doing. You know, kind of give me that slap kindly and gently, but please give me that slap back to reality. So she does that, and that helps. And the final thing is I believe in work-life integration. So my kids, they come to the office regularly, and I'm hanging out, and they're doing quote-unquote work. Sometimes we're just goofing around. My wife participates too. Not much, but a little bit, and it's time to spend some time together. And the final
paper
thing
kids.
Is...
Do you guys like throw toilet paper around?
What was that?
I said the toilet paper kids, do they get to play with it and... throw it up in the trees and.
No.
The funny thing is, I'm not even like that into toilet paper,
I'm just kidding.
I guess that's my destiny in life. A lot of people think I love like bathroom humor and stuff, and I don't. But So that's basically what I do. I don't think anyone's perfect. I think some people profess to be, and I'm very cautious of people that have a stress-free life, at least touting that they do. I think we all do it. And those are just my few tricks to at least help reduce it to some degree.
And your honesty, you know, I really find, and one of the things I think Elizabeth will concur, and again, we talk about this, you know, off air, we talk about, wow, isn't it amazing? We're going to have to write a book, Elizabeth, about our interviews. The really great people like yourself, you know, they really do in their own self-relationship what they do with other relationships. And one of the things that you do, you're honest with yourself, which tells me that, you know, that is important, to be honest with other people. You know, you have a good sense of humor about yourself. You don't take yourself too seriously, as Evan Hubbard said, you know, you don't get out alive anyway. But, you know, that sense of humor, that honesty, that integrity, that passion, the enthusiasm, you know, it gets down to core values and basics that I think if you, you know, you are who you associate with too. And all of the things that you've given us are really just the tip of the iceberg. So I want people to make sure that they get your newsletter. You have a great following on Twitter, as much as we talk about the social media thing. You have a great fan page. You have great posts. You had, you know, some recent things that I just put and forwarded on my Facebook page, and we all help each other. But just give everybody how they connect with you. Again, your website, your Twitter, your Facebook, you're getting your book, anything that you want to say, because we're down to like a couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure. So the best spot to go, hands down, is go to toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. There are tons of free resources, and you can get even more if you sign up. Now, here's the trade-off. If you sign up, of course, I will email you. But I don't believe in the traditional kind of e-marketing stuff that people do. I kind of share some funny stories and experiences I went through. And then, you know, when I have stuff for sale or something you want to check out, by all means, I'll bring it to your attention. But you get tons of free, interesting stuff that way, and I'll turn you on to my Twitter account and all the other stuff I'm on. But toiletpaperentrepreneur.com, for now, is definitely the place to get started.
Awesome. Well, I just want to thank you for just being so awesome, being yourself. We are honored to have had you here as a guest. You are sharing your shine, and that's what it's all about. And the other thing is that you are blessed, but you're being a blessing, and you keep giving what you're getting. And I think that that is just so awesome, and we're making you the executive officer and the best people we know. I hope you're going to come back and join us as you continue to do all these awesome things. And it would be great. And I also want people to know, because Elizabeth Hamilton, I love her. Make sure that you, I got to do a little plug here. She has a great magazine, and go to besteveryou.com, and she's committed to helping everybody live their best life now. And she has a great magazine. I'm privileged to be a contributing writer on that. It's sometimes in our Motivation Marathon. Check that out. And just know that whatever is in your heart, you're not here by accident. And it's people like Mike and Elizabeth Elizabeth, and I like to put myself in there too, that are passionate about sharing whatever it is we know, we pass on, and we help each other. And that's what makes the difference. So do one thing different. Make sure that you connect with these dynamic, great people. Share the show with a friend. Keep us going and growing. We're over 33,000 listeners now, and it's all because of you. And make sure that you download the show on iTunes, replay it so that you can recycle all this wisdom, because repetition is the best teacher. And I just want to thank you again, both of you, Mike and Elizabeth. And until next time, in the famous words of Oscar Wilde, be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Go out and make it a great day. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.